Arjunuvacha, kim tad brahma, kim adhyatmam, kim karma purushottama, aribhutam chikim proktam, aridhaivam kim uchite, ariyagya katam kotra, dehesmin madhusudana, prayanakali chakatam, geyosi niyatatmabi, sri bhagavan uvacha, aksharam brahma paramam, sabhavo dhyatma muchite, bhuta bhavod bhavakaro, visarga karma samjitaha. Adibhutam sharo bhava, purushaschari daivatam, ariyogyo hamevatra, dehe deha bratambara. Antakale chamameva, smanan bhuktva kalevaram, yak prayati samad bhavam, yati nasyatra shangshayaha. Yang yang vapi smanan bhavam, tajatyante kalevaram, tam tame vaiti konteya, sadatad bhava bhavitaha. Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu, mamanus mara yudhyacha, mayarpitam mano budhir, mami vaishyatya shamsayaha. Abhyasa yoga yuktena, chetasa nanyagamina, paramam purusham divyam, yati partanu chintayan. Kavim puranam manushashitaram, anuraniyang samanusmaridyaha, sarvasya dataram achintarupam, aditya varnam tamasa parastat. Prayana kale manasa chalena, bhaktya yukto yoga balena chaiva, bruvor madye pranam avesha samyak, satambaram purusham upaiti divyam. Yadaksharam veda vido vadanti, vishanti yad yatayo vita ragaha, yadichchanto brahmacharyam charanti, tate param sangrahena pravakshe. Sarvadvarani samyamya, manohridhi nadudhyacha, murdhadhyayatmana pranam, astito yoga dharanam. Om ite kaksharam prama, vyaharan mamanusmaran, yaprayati tajandeham, sayati paramam gatim. Ananya chetas satatam, yomam smarati nityashaha, tasyaham sulabha parta, nitya yuktasya yoginaha. Mamupetya punarjanma, dukalaya mashashvatam, napnuvanti mahatmanaha, samsidhim paramam gataha. Abhrama bhuvana loka, punaravartinorjuna, mamupetya tukonteya, punarjanma navidyate. Sahasra yuga paryantam, arhat brahmano viduhu, ratrim yuga sahasrantam, teho ratra vito janaha. Avyaktad vaktaya sarva, pravavatyarharagame, ratyagame praliyante, tatra vyakta samjake. Bhuta grama sa evayam, bhutva bhutva praliyate, ratyagame vasha parta, pravabhatyaharagame. Parastasmatu bhavonyo, vyakto vyaktat sanatanaha, yaksak sarveshu bhuteshu, nasyatsu navinasyati. Avyakto shara ityuktas, tamahu paramam gatim, yam prapyana nivartante, tadhama paramam mama. Purusha sapara parta, bhaktya labhyastvananyaya, yasyantastani bhutani, yena sarvam idam tatam. Yatra kale tvanavratim, avratim chaiva yoginaha, prayata yantitam kalam, vakshami paratarshabha. Agnir jyotiraha shukla, Shanmasa Uttarayanam Tatra Prayata Gachanti Brahma Brahma Vido Janaha Dhumo Ratris Tata Krishna Shanmasa Dakshinayanam Tatra Chandran Masam Jyotir Yogi Prapya Nivartate Shukla Krishne Katiyete Jagata Shashvate Mate Ekaya Yatyanavratim Anvaya Vartate Punaha Naite Sriti Parta Janan Yogi Muyati Kashchana Tasmat Sarveshu Kaleshu Yoga Yukto Bhavarjuna Vedeshu Yagyeshu Tapasu Chaiva Daneshu Yat Punya Palam Pratishtam Eti Tat Sarvam Idam Baditva Yogi Param Stanu Upaiti Chajam Om Tat Sariti Srimad Bhagavad Gita Supanishad Subrahma Vidyayam Yoga Shastri Shri Krishna Arjuna Sambhare Tarakar Brahma Yoga Nama Shashtamo Ashtamo Dhyayaha Hari Om. Please, everyone can move up just a little bit and please pull out a few more of the asans for any of the new guests that come in. Please make yourself comfortable. There are asans for everyone to sit on. Now let's read the translation and let's do two each and we'll pass the microphone around. And Shailesh, you start. Page 365. And if someone could give Bhagavad Gita's to the... If anybody didn't get one who just walked in.
Go ahead. Arjuna inquired, O my Lord, O Supreme Person, what is Brahman? What is the Self? What are fruitive activities? What is this material manifestation? And what are the demigods? Please explain this to me. Who is the Lord of Sacrifice? And how does he live in the body, O Madhusudana? And how can those engaged in devotional service know you at the time of death?
The Supreme Personality of God has said, the indestructible transcendental living entity is called Brahman, and his eternal nature is called Abhyatma, the Self, action presenting to the development of the material bodies of the living entities is called karma or fruitive activities. O best of embodied being, the physical nature which is constantly changing is called Abhudheya, the material manifestation, the universal form of the Lord, which include all the demigods like those of the sun and the moon, is called Advaita. And I, the Supreme Lord, represent the super soul of the heart of every embodied being. I am called Adijnana, the Lord of Sacrifice.
And whoever at the end of his life quits his body remembering me alone at once attains my nature. Of this there is no doubt. Whatever state of being one remembers when he quits his body, O son of Kunti, that state he will attain without fail.
Therefore, Arjuna, you should always think of me in the form of Krishna and at the same time carry out your prescribed duty of fighting. With your activities dedicated to me and your mind and intelligence fixed on me, you will attain me without doubt. He who meditates on me as the Supreme Personality of the Godhead, his mind constantly engaged in remembering me, undeviated from the path, he, O Partha, is sure to reach me.
One should meditate upon the Supreme Person as the one who knows everything, as he who is the oldest, who is the controller, who is the smaller than the smallest, who is the maintainer of everything, who is beyond all material conception, who is inconceivable, and who is always a person. He is luminous like the sun, and he is transcendental, beyond this material nature. One who, at the time of death, fixes his life air between the eyebrows, and by the strength of yoga, with an undeviating mind, engages himself in remembering the Supreme Lord in full devotion, will certainly attain to the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Persons who are learned in the Vedas, who utter Omkara, and who are great sages in the renounced order, enter into Brahman. Desiring such perfection, one practices celibacy. I shall now briefly explain to you this process by which one may attain salvation. The yogic situation is that of detachment from all sensual engagements, closing all the doors of the senses and fixing the mind on the heart and the life air at the top of the head, one establishes himself in yoga.
After being situated in this yoga practice and vibrating the sacred syllable Om, the supreme combination of letters, if one thinks of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and quits his body, he will certainly reach the spiritual planets. For one who always remembers me without deviation, I am easy to obtain, O son of Pritha, because of his constant engagement in devotional service.
After attaining me, the great soul, who are yogi in devotion, never return to this temporary world. This is which is full of miseries because they have attained the highest perfection. From the highest planet in the material world down to the lowest, all are places of misery wherein repeated births and death takes place. But one who attained to my abode, O son of Kunti, never takes birth again.
By human calculation, 1,000 ages taken together form the duration of Brahma's one day, and such also is the duration of his night. As the beginning of Brahma's day, all living entities become manifest from the unmanifest state, and therefore, when the night falls, they are merged into the unmanifest again.
Again and again, when Brahma's day arrives, all living entities come into being, and with the arrival of Brahma's night, they are helplessly annihilated. Yes, there is another manifested nature which is eternal and is transcendental to this manifested and unmanifested matter. It is supreme and is never annihilated. When all in this world is annihilated, that part remains as it is.
That which the Vedantists describe as unmanifest and infallible, that which is known as the supreme destination, that place from which, having attained it, one never returns, that is my supreme abode. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is greater than all, is attainable by unalloyed devotion. Although he is present in his abode, he is all-pervading, and everything is situated within him.
O best of the Bharatas, I shall now explain to you the different times at which, passing away from this world, the yogi does or does not come back. Those who know the Supreme Brahman attain that Supreme by passing away from the world during the influence of the fiery God in the light at an auspicious moment of the day, during the fortnight of the waxing moon, or during the 6 months when the sun travels in the north.
The mystic who passes away from this world during the smoke, the night, the fortnight of the waning moon, or the 6 months when the sun passes to the south, reaches the moon planet, but again comes back. According to the Vedic opinion, there are two ways of passing from this world. one in light and one in darkness. When one passes in light, he does not come back. But when passes in darkness, he returns.
Although the devotees know these two paths, O Arjuna, they are never bewildered. Therefore, be always fixed in devotion. A person who accepts the path of devotional service is not bereft of the results derived from studying the Vedas, performing sacrifices, undergoing austerities, giving charity, or pursuing philosophical and fruitive activities. Simply by performing devotional service, he attains all these, and at the end, he reaches the supreme eternal abode.
So, Janardhan, which purport do you want to hear? Asking Janardhan that. You want to hear the last one? Okay. This is text 28 by special request. Purport. I'll read the translation again. A person who accepts the path of devotional service is not bereft of the results derived from studying the Vedas, performing sacrifices, undergoing austerities, giving charity, or pursuing philosophical and fruitive activities. Simply by performing devotional service, he attains all these. And at the end, he reaches the supreme eternal abode. Purport. This verse is the summation of the 7th and 8th chapters, which particularly deal with Krishna consciousness and devotional service. One has to study the Vedas under the guidance of the spiritual master and undergo many austerities and penances while living under his care. A brahmachari has to live in the home of the spiritual master just like a servant, and he must beg alms from door to door and bring them to the spiritual master. He takes food only under the master's order, and if the master neglects to call the student for the food that day, the student fasts. These are some of the Vedic principles for observing brahmacharya. After the student studies the Vedas under the master for some time, at least from age 5 to 20, he becomes a man of perfect character. Study of the Vedas is not meant for the recreation of armchair speculators, but for the formation of character. After this training, the brahmachari is allowed to enter in the household life and marry. When he is a householder, he has to perform many sacrifices so that he may achieve further enlightenment. He must also give charity according to the country, time, and candidate, discriminating among charity in goodness, in passion, and in ignorance, as described in Bhagavad Gita. Then after retiring from household life, upon accepting the order of vanaprastha, he undergoes severe penances, living in forests, dressing with tree bark, not shaving, etc. By carrying out the orders of brahmacharya, household life, vanaprastha, and finally sannyas, one becomes elevated to the perfectional stage of life. Some are then elevated to the heavenly planets, heavenly kingdoms, and when they become even more advanced, they are liberated in the spiritual sky, either in the impersonal Brahmajyoti or in the Vaikuntha planets or Krishna Loka. This is the path outlined by Vedic literatures. The beauty of Krishna consciousness, however, is that by one stroke, by engaging in devotional service, one can surpass all the rituals of the different orders of life. The words idam viditva indicate that one should understand the instructions given by Sri Krishna in this chapter of the 7th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. One should try to understand these chapters not by scholarship or mental speculation, but by hearing them in association with devotees. Chapters 7 through 12 are the essence of Bhagavad Gita. The first six and the last six chapters are like coverings for the middle six chapters, which are especially protected by the Lord. If one is fortunate enough to understand Bhagavad Gita, especially these middle six chapters, in the association of devotees, then his life at once becomes glorified beyond all penances, sacrifices, charities, speculations, etc., for one can achieve all the results of these activities simply by Krishna consciousness. One who has a little faith in Bhagavad Gita should learn Bhagavad Gita from a devotee, because in the beginning of the fourth chapter, it is stated clearly that Bhagavad Gita can be understood only by devotees. No one else can perfectly understand the purpose of Bhagavad Gita. One should therefore learn Bhagavad Gita from a devotee of Krishna, not from mental speculators. This is a sign of faith. When one searches for a devotee and fortunately gets a devotee's association, one actually begins to study and understand Bhagavad Gita. By advancement in the association of the devotee, one is placed in devotional service, and this service dispels all one's misgivings about God, about Krishna or God, and Krishna's activities, form, pastimes, name, and other features. After these misgivings have been perfectly cleared away, one becomes fixed in one's study. Then one relishes the study of Bhagavad Gita and attains the state of feeling always Krishna conscious. In the advanced stage, one falls completely in love with Krishna. This highest perfectional stage of life enables the devotee to be transferred to Krishna's abode in the spiritual sky, Goloka Vrindavan, where the devotee becomes eternally happy. So what did you hear? We'll just take some reflections back. Whatever part stuck out in your mind, reflect back. Hansapriya? But first take the microphone. If you'll pass it up. Thank you.
I like that the beauty of Krishna consciousness is, however, is that by one stroke, by engaging in devotional service, one can surpass all the rituals of the different orders of life.
What did you like about that?
I just personally find myself get lost. What is right, what is wrong, or what I should be doing, what could be, you know, the right thing to do. I personally went through in my teenage that growing up in India, I saw that my neighbors are worshipping demigods and my parents are going to the Hare Krishna temple and they were just doing so many penances and they were still not happy and going after different things. So I had a question, why do I worship, you know, Krishna only? Why not Shiva or Ganesha? I like that that they were worshipping. I saw my grandparents and neighbors. They have worshipped for many years and they were not happy. But just going to the temple and engaging in devotional service, the peace and the feeling of completeness that attracted me from so lost and bewildered.
That's nice. Thank you very much. So by one stroke, taking to Krishna consciousness, then one attains everything. Actually, this is a definition of faith given in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Shraddha shabdhi vishvaskahi surida nishchoy Krishna bhakti koila sarva karma krita hoy. That faith means I have an understanding that if I simply worship Krishna because he's the root of everything, then everything else is done perfectly, and I'll obtain everything. That's basically what this last verse has said. And this is the essence of faith in Krishna consciousness. Rakshit Prabhu, you had a point? A reflection?
Happy to make one, and that pertains to the last paragraph, which is that one who has a little faith in Bhagavad Gita should learn Bhagavad Gita from a devotee. Because in the beginning of the fourth chapter, it is stated that Bhagavad Gita can be understood only by devotees. No one else can perfectly understand the purpose of Bhagavad Gita. It is a very good point because essentially it's making a distinction between learning it from mental speculators and learning it from those who have realized it through disciplic succession. The mental speculators are essentially caught up in the idea that with their mind and their imagination, they can interpret the Bhagavad Gita. And that is not the way it is to be understood, because they are going to interpret it according to their own experiences, and interpretations are going to vary from person to person in mental speculation. Whereas learning it from devotees have got it through disciplic succession, which is a descending process, whereby this knowledge has been passed on from those who have realized it and heard it from their spiritual master. So that would be the way of learning the Bhagavad Gita as it is.
Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Another reflection. What did you hear? What stuck in your mind? Vipul's ready to jump. Oh, Mataji, go ahead, and then Vipul.
I really like the part about that actually, if you just perform devotional service, then you have performed everything. That's, you know, simply by performing devotional service, he attains all these, and at the end, he reaches the supreme eternal abode. And then Prabhupada develops this very well, explaining all the different stages you could go through. And actually, if you just perform devotional service, you are going through all the stages. So just do that. I just appreciate that very much.
Keep it simple.
Yeah.
I remember before I saw the teachings that Prabhupada was distributing, I first saw it in a Back to Godhead magazine. But before that, I was reading all kinds of books about spiritual knowledge. And I had the idea that of renunciation. A lot of them talked about renunciation. So I had restricted my eating and all kinds of other practices that I thought would be in line with severe austerities, like not wearing shoes or letting my hair get matted and things like that. And then when I remember one day when I was looking at the Bhagavad Gita, at the Back to Godhead magazine, and I read there that by chanting, dancing, and feasting in the age of Kali Yuga, one can attain all perfection. And I was like eating once a day, a little something. And I read that and it was like, wait a minute. Chanting, dancing, and feasting. And as much as I at first I thought that could be right, that it caught my attention and I thought, well, I better find out if it is before I keep going with what I'm doing. And it did turn out to be true. And I'm very happy for it. Vipul, you had something you were going to add.
In the start of the purport, Prabhupada is like explaining the study that, you know, the Vedas recommend, like going through Brahmacharya Ashram and then householder life and then Vanaprastha. So in case of Brahmacharya, he says that the study of the Vedas is to make a person of perfect character and not just armchair speculators. So today, you know, we see that today the education system, it doesn't make person of character, but, you know, everyone like is this word is very right, you know, armchair speculator. They're just sitting and they're not actually not caring, but, you know.
Yeah, it's not emphasized so much. I'm smiling because I'm remembering Akurnath Prabhu's comment this morning on the on the Book Distribution Yahoo group. I don't know if any of you saw his report from our book distribution yesterday in Santa Cruz, but as he wrote, he said there was the normal Mishigas there in Santa Cruz. I don't know if any of you speak Yiddish, but Mishigas means like a whole crazy group of people. Santa Cruz is a wild and very interesting place, all kinds of people there. Anyway, he pointed out that at Santa Cruz yesterday, there was an event going on to see how many, they wanted to take a group picture and set a world record for how many people could be in a group picture wearing an Afro wig. And so, you know, practically every fifth person in Santa Cruz yesterday was wearing either a wild-colored wig. And so Akurnath Prabhu had commented in his GNAB that it's a college town. He said, I'm glad to see that they're keeping their priorities straight in this college town, you know, keeping in the forefront what's actually important in life. Yeah, this idea of character, and it doesn't come about just by studies, but by a lifestyle. And that's developed over time through proper association, proper conduct. Sadachara is mentioned, or proper character, as one of the pramanais tat sadacharais tadabhyasera nantaram bodhayana manatmanam bhaktim apyutamam labhet. this Brahma Samhita mentions that through proper character, one actually develops the proper mentality in which to understand Krishna. Without that, and without that kind of training, then one spoils one's life. And therefore, Prahlad Maharaj recommends, Komara acharet pragno dharmam bhagavatam iha durlabham manasam janma tadapya dhruvam artadam. From the very beginning of childhood, one should be given every opportunity to take to Krishna consciousness, because it's a developmental process throughout life. And one can imbibe it even from a young age, or especially from a young age in the formative ages. Therefore, we're starting a school here. We just had a meeting today from 2 o'clock, 4 o'clock, and our good friends Jagadish Prabhu and dear Lilita came all the way down from Santa Rosa to tell us about the school that they had started out in the, was it the Midwest or on the East Coast? North Carolina. Some years ago, very successfully, and we're doing the same thing here, because it's important to have a place where kids can go and have a spiritual environment and also learn at the same time, because especially in this age, it's easy to become for children to become exposed to so many bad habits early on, and then not have such an advantage in spiritual life. What else? Yes.
So, you know, I was reading this, the last, chapter where it is mentioned that one can only understand Bhagavad Gita to the devotees. You know, when I feel as an individual, when we go to college, we hardly make it to the top. Or if you make it to the top, there could be another better college where somebody could be better than you. Or maybe in that case, he might not be scoring like, you know, A plus or whatever. So, I mean, definitely you cannot be perfect as an individual. And if you are not perfect, it is better to surrender rather than expecting that what my interpretation or what I am analyzing is correct. So I think this is the best thing to try.
Kishore had a point, and Srinivas, thank you very much.
Here the second, third paragraph says, beauty of Krishna consciousness, however, is that by one stroke, by engaging in devotional service, one can surpass all the rituals of different orders of life. So basically it is, Prabhupada is comparing Krishna consciousness or bhakti yoga with Varnashrama system. But on the other hand, we also find Prabhupada stressing the importance of following Varnashrama in the present context as well, even if it means going way beyond in terms of what people are currently doing. So is it like Varnashrama is below Krishna consciousness? So if so, why Prabhupada stressed it? Or is it that Varnashrama is also Krishna consciousness, but since it's not possible to do that, we are doing this. So in that way, both are equivalent, or I'm just trying to see the difference between these two.
Yeah, understand. Well, first of all, Chaturvanya Maya Shrishtam Guna Karma Vibhagsha. Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita that he's created this system of Varna and Ashram, because naturally, according to the mixtures of the modes of material nature, different people under different modes fall into various categories naturally. And Varnashram, to simplify things, means that if you don't have 2 feet on the ground, if you're not balanced, then it's very difficult for you to jump up or do anything productive. And therefore, it's a way that everyone can fit into their natural situation in life so that they can be peaceful and make progress naturally according to their mode of nature. Oftentimes we see in modern society that young people will go through a whole school system and then still not know what they're going to do with their life. It's like a big conundrum walking around even at 28 years old, 35, and what do you do? Well, I haven't decided yet what I'm going to do, and feel rather unsettled. But in the Varnashram system, there's a way that human beings can be productive and fit in. As far as the synthesis of those two ideas go, that Krishna consciousness goes by one fell swoop, therefore the other one isn't really necessary, as seems to be indicated in this verse. There's a concept which is introduced by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, which is carried forward by Prabhupada, which is called Daivi Varnashram, which simplifies the Varnashram in such a way that it's related to spiritual life, and that the Varnas and Ashrams are directly related to Krishna consciousness. Of course, that's the idea of Varnashram anyway, that simply if you're acting in your Varna and Ashram in a traditional society of Varnashram, which we don't have, and there's not really a capability of reviving that entirely. The rules and regulations of Varnashram are numerous, more than any of us would probably care to look at or be able to follow in one day. And the idea behind the Varnashram system anyway, in a general sense, is that if you're following the Varnashram system, you're pleasing the Lord. As I've given the example before, much the same as if you're following the laws of California, doing things properly, you're pleasing Arnold Schwarzenegger, the governor. Or if you're a good citizen in America, then Barack Obama will be pleased with you, sort of in an indirect way. Prabhupada did indicate that there was scope for establishing Varnashram in certain places, to the extent that people are suffering because of the onslaught of material nature in the Kali Yuga. They don't have any balance in their lives, and they need that. People need a place to go and take shelter. Varnashram, organizing in such a way that people can live a more simple life and a productive life, as we were talking today in our discussion about starting a school. Young people, kids, they need a way to be able to develop. And if there's an artificial system, for instance, one devotee was saying in the class, Mother Dira was saying that when she was young, she's an artist, she's a famous artist actually, she's sitting right here with us. And have you met her? Could you identify yourself? She's one of the famous artists of ISKCON who has painted many of the...
I used to be called Dirga Rodriga at that time. So I have many names. For now, it's Dira Lalita.
Okay, so Dira Lalita is a famous artist in ISKCON, and we can look at some of her artwork later. They're in Prabhupada's books. And she was mentioning how when she was a child, there were two choices in France of being of going the science route or going more literary route, and her parents insisted that she went the scientific route, even though she's an artist and inclined in that way. And she suffered because of it. So an ideal system is where one can identify what one's proclivities are, what the proclivities are of the of people that are in the group, in the society, in the community, and give them proper engagement so that they can be balanced and take to Krishna consciousness in a peaceful way. It's a huge project, Varnashram. I mean, it's practically boggles the imagination of how one would establish Varnashram. And in certain places in Prabhupada's books, he said it's not possible in the Kali Yuga. Whereas at other times, he gives very definitive instructions that we should revive Varnashram. And therefore, there's a concept of think globally but work locally. And that's probably the best application for this is, you know, find out in your, first of all, you know, talking about Varnashram as a concept, meaning having a balanced life, find out, first of all, in your own life, how to apply it. And then in your smaller community, how everyone can be accommodated so that so they can feel like they're not harassed by material nature. This is part of community building anyway. As we're building a community here, we're looking and finding ways that we can accommodate everybody so that nobody gets picked off by the material nature. We can have a cohesive group and we have ways that devotees can work according to their nature, that'd be an ideal thing to have, right? So the two things can be balanced, and it goes towards the concept of Daivi Varnashram, which is we're not doing it just for the sake of Varnashram, because it's not possible anyway, but we do it with the aim to make sure to the best of our ability that everyone is living a balanced life so that they can take to Krishna consciousness without much distraction or as little distraction as possible. And that's a big project. And, on a local level, it really goes to kind of what we're thinking about here as a community, how to take care of everyone and give them some kind of a way to fit in and do something that's productive so they can use the balance of their time for Krishna consciousness. But it's a fact that if you take to Krishna consciousness directly, then all the other details given in Varnashram and the Vedas become irrelevant, because that's the ultimate goal of Varnashram anyway. And there's a verse in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam in which Krishna teaches Uddhava that one should stay close to the rules and regulations of Varnashram until one has attained a complete taste for hearing and chanting Krishna consciousness. And at that point, it's not relevant anyway, because that's the goal of it, ultimately. Please, Jagadish.
Just in Lord Chaitanya's discussions with Ramananda Roy, and you might just mention the flow of that conversation in this vein also.
Okay. Thank you. When Lord Chaitanya was having a discussion with Ramananda Roy, as Jagadish Prabhu has so kindly pointed out, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked Ramananda Roy to explain what would be the what is the pinnacle of Krishna consciousness, what is the most advantageous position in Krishna consciousness. And in the beginning suggestions that Ramananda Roy gave to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he suggested Varnashram. And he quoted a verse from the Vishnu Purana, Varnashrama Charavata, in which he says that just by following the Varnashram system, one pleases Vishnu. And Lord Chaitanya's response to that was, oh, that is external. He said it's external and not so important. Say something more. If you know something better than that, say it. So he sort of, pushed it along. What's the next thing? What's the next thing? He gave various suggestions about, okay, we'll renounce the Varnashram. He said, then take sannyas. Mahaprabhu said, that's external also, keep going. And after several suggestions about mixed bhakti, he came to a verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam in which Lord Brahma, in his prayers to Lord Krishna, had said, as you know very well, Jnane prayasam udapasya namanta eva jivanti sanmukaritam bhavatiyavartam stane stita shutigatam tanuvan manobir ye prayaso jita jito pyasit haistrilokyam. And in that verse, where Lord Chaitanya finally said, very good, I accept this. Of course, he asked him to go further after that, and he did. But he accepted that verse as applicable, especially for those in this age of Kali Yuga, that give up the process of speculative knowledge is the first suggestion. Jnane prayasam udapasya namanta eva. Don't try to find out God by your intelligence. Then he said, in the association of realized souls, you should hear and also engage in service. And very importantly, he said, stane stita, stay in your position. This means you don't have to adjust anything externally. You don't have to change your job. You don't have to change your house. You don't have to change your hairstyle. You don't have to change your... what else don't you have to change? Your what?
Way of living.
Your way of living? You don't have to change anything, but one thing you have to change is you have to add something to your life. And he said, stanestita shutikatam tanuvan manobir, add this one thing, this hearing from pure devotees in disciplic succession. If you hear that transcendental sound vibration, and of course we can go on till the moon comes up tonight you know, talking about those verses in which it is the power of hearing the sound vibration is extolled. Satam prasangam mama virya sambido bhavanti hrit karna rasayana kata taj joshana ashu apavargavart mani shradaratir bhaktir anukramishuti, in which Lord Kapiladev told Devahuti that if you hear in the association of pure devotees, you'll hear a wonderful sound, and that sound will go through your ears into your heart, and just by exposing yourself to it in a submissive way, submissive hearing, then you'll be on the path back home, back to God at Apavarga. And many other verses, which you know well. And so, as Jagadish Prabhu had suggested, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his comments about Varnashram, had, you know, mentioned it as external and suggested the direct process of Krishna consciousness. And so how Prabhupada, you know, brought it up as a viable option is up to us to enact to the best of our ability by seeing how to help people. That's our mission, really, is how to help ourselves, because a dead paramedic can't save anyone, and then help others around us. The order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is help yourself and then help everybody else in your vicinity. You know, become a guru, he said, and that means, you know, become sense controlled, become full of knowledge, and then help everybody in your household, then help everyone in your village. If you can, go further than that. Help everyone in the world if you have such power to do that kind of thing. And all of those things will require a balanced approach, because as Devahuti mentions in the Bhagavatam, we're in an interesting situation as souls because we're mixed into matter. And how do you tell the difference between one and the other? Sometimes people say, are you sure there's a soul? Because I sure feel like I'm my body. I can't tell the difference. You know, I look like I'm my body. Everyone else thinks I'm my body. When someone dies, everyone says, he died. And it's like, he didn't die. He's right there. No, he's gone. No, he's right there. No one knows the difference. So Krishna went to great pains in the Bhagavad Gita to explain what's the difference between the body and the soul. He said, no, when the soul leaves the body, then the body's basically decomposing matter, and it's not, you can hack somebody's arm off, and they won't know the difference. They won't even care. But while they're in the body, it's very, very important. So we're a mixture. We're mixed into matter right now. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that therefore, while we're practicing spiritual life, there's a tendency in the beginning, especially as we begin our spiritual practice, to be out of balance, to have a tendency towards worldliness. We may have an inclination towards spiritual life, but still we're overcome by our material necessities, material desires, or even unnecessary things, which are habits that we have. Therefore, he says, api chet sudaracharo, Krishna says, api chet sudaracharo, bhajate mam ananya bhak, sadureva samantavya samyag vyavasito hisa, that one who's endeavoring on the path of Krishna consciousness, even if they get out of balance sometimes and take to worldliness to even a great degree, he says, sudarachara means even if they do something which seems like it's abominable, that person, and Krishna is very emphatic about this, must be considered saintly still because they're on the path and they will come into balance and they will ultimately attain success if they continue. Shri Pram Bhavati Dharmatma Shasvach Chantim Nagachati Konteya Pratijanihi Nami Bhakti Pranashati. He says in the next verse, if you continue on this, very quickly you'll attain perfection. You'll attain the supreme peace. And therefore, Prabhupada recommends in his commentary to that next verse, 31, in the ninth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that one should go on chanting Hare Krishna without stoppage. That'll do it in one fell swoop, if you can chant Hare Krishna without stoppage. And therefore, you know, our Varnashram and our association, Prabhupada formed a society. Not an easy thing to do because it requires cooperation. It means when you have to, it's one of the hardest things to do is cooperate with other people. And, you know, everyone has different ideas. Everyone's unique. Every person is an individual and has a different way of doing things and thinking about it. And therefore, to accommodate how other people think and at the same time have a big society that has the same mission, it ain't easy. And but it's also, that's part of Varnashram. It's a bigger project. It's a bigger idea. Instead of just a sage sitting in a cave somewhere, chanting and hearing, go back to Godhead. Organize a big group so you can get more people in. And you can bring people in and they can start practicing. That's really Varnashram. That's the idea of it. It's a huge project, you know, to get everyone involved, including people who have been affected by the mode of ignorance. And those who are in the mode of passion. Those who are in the mode of goodness. And everyone has a place where they can peacefully do their work. And so, you know, we need to accommodate those things. Bali Maran Prabhu, please give him a microphone.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
As you see in some places, Prabhupada mentioned that if a person, 100 lifetimes, if he does, 100 Ashwamedha Yajna in a lifetime, then he is eligible to become Indra. And at the same time mentioned that if he does 100 lifetime of Varnashram Dharma he practices, then he's qualified to become a Brahma. So how important is likely, you know, to perform to Varnashram Dharma? And only in the one universe we have only one Brahma. So it looks like Varnashram Dharma to say is very easy, but to practice to the full in a perfection may not be that easy. And also to 100 lifetime, definitely it's a greatest austerity, what I think.
Yeah, and really in the essence of the verse we're studying tonight and the discussion that came afterwards is about how if you take to the process of Krishna consciousness, specifically hearing and chanting in the association of devotees, then very quickly you'll come to the perfectional stage because of the power of that process. And Prabhupada even uses the phraseology that you'll bypass all the other kinds of, you know, rules and regulations. What's Brahma's name? Vidhi. You know, at the end of the Brahma Samhita, he said, Krishna is speaking to Brahma and he says, okay, Vidhi. It's his name, rules and regulations. In fact, that's how Brahma got into trouble, is because, you know, he's so focused on rules and regulations. When he came and saw Krishna playing with his cowherd boyfriends, he looked and he saw they were all sitting there having picnic and, you know, Krishna eating with his left hand, and, you know, like there are all these pastimes of them playing together. And he thought, that's the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Wait a minute. And so he tested him. He stole away his calves and the rest of his friends just to see if he was the all-powerful Supreme Personality of Godhead. It was hard for him to believe that he was. He's focused on these rules and regulations. Anyway, nice point. Can follow Varnashram perfectly for 100 lifetimes, then you're eligible to become a Brahma. And that's, okay, Sunny, and then Janardhan.
Prabhuji, when you're talking about the Varnashrama Dharma, is Varna and Ashrama, there is four and four, there's a plus eight. Yeah. Now, we're talking about the Varna Dharma is misinterpreted in India for a long time. Because based upon that word, Krishna created these things, but nobody say that it is based upon the Gunakarma Vipagashe. Therefore, they created a caste system for centuries, and it is the biggest curse in India. For 85% people are not getting the real knowledge because of that caste system built up on that. It's supposed to be not like that, because when you think about the four division of that Varna Dharma, person who wrote this book, Vyasa Mahadev, is considered as Shudramani. Narada is a Shudramani. Valmiki is a Shudramani. But after some point, it went in different way. Therefore, they cast out a big portion of the people from the knowledge. And because they are not mentioning that it's based upon the quality and the work they do, you know, guna karma vibhagase. The second line, comfortably we are missing.
Yes. Yeah, if you're the son of a high court judge, doesn't mean that you're also a high court judge.
Prabhuji, Srila Prabhupada, he mentioned that in several books for that thing.
Same example. Yep. Thank you very much. Nice point. Janardhan? Get him a mic back there.
I just wanted to clarify the purpose of Varnashram Dharma, though, is to serve the Supreme Lord Krishna, not to be Brahma or achieve some high position. A devotee doesn't matter whether or not their only desire is to be in a position where they can continue to serve Krishna. They don't even desire to achieve elevation or salvation. And I just wanted that fact clarified through someone, if my understanding is indeed correct. They're not aspiring for a position of Brahma or or any elevation, just the opportunity to continue.
Dharma swanustita punsam vishvakshena katasuya notpadiyad yadiratim shrama ivahi kevalam. If one performs the practice of the varnas and ashrams and does one's duties without coming to the point of love of God, then the Bhagavatam says is simply shrama. And of course, any kind of, I think you're trying to say, any kind of material motivation is the Bhagavatam, the standard of, the gold standard of actual spiritual practice is that the Bhagavatam rejects any kind of material motivation. Is this what you wanted me to talk about? Dharma prochita kaitavo tra paramo nirmatsaranam satam. The Bhagavatam states emphatically at the very beginning that it rejects all religious activities that are materially motivated. Can everyone move up by 7.2 inches, please? Some are trying to. It rejects all religious activities that are materially motivated and propounds the highest truth, which is reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. Such truth uproots the threefold miseries. And the beautiful Bhagavatam compiled by the great sage Srila Vyasadeva is sufficient in itself for God realization. And one who has taken the time to hear the Bhagavatam will find the Supreme Lord within the heart. So, performing any kind of duty, including Varnashram, ultimately is meant for pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And without that motivation and without that result, then it is considered to be a waste of time. And it has a tendency to, of course, as everything does, tends to degrade into materialistic concepts because the material world is contaminated. Because of the three modes of material nature and they're mixing together, because of association with those modes, all kinds of even noble pursuits, including passing on the message of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, become distorted over time. That's why at certain intervals Krishna comes to refresh the message that he has originally spoken and passed on. Yoga nashta parantapa, he says in the Bhagavad Gita, that the message of Krishna consciousness had become distorted, it had become lost, and therefore he's coming to refresh it by speaking again the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. And in the Uddhava Gita, in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna mentions how over time, the original message of the parampara has a tendency to get distorted. And therefore, it's necessary for the Lord to come in and restore that. The ultimate point is that spiritual life is meant to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead without any motivation. It must be unmotivated and uninterrupted in order to satisfy the self. I was speaking to somebody yesterday in Santa Cruz while we were out distributing books, and question comes up a lot about Well, is this a different religion, or you know, what are you really trying to do out here? And I was explaining to this young man that actually we're not trying to convert anybody from one thing to another, but we're presenting the highest standard, the gold standard of what actual spiritual life is, and that is unmotivated, uninterrupted service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then in any process, if one develops love for God, no matter what the process is, if you can discern that you're developing this unmotivated, uninterrupted service to the Supreme Lord, then you're in a process which is effective. And if you're following even Varnashram or any other system, Vedic system, and it becomes contaminated by some other desire, as often happens in any process, tendency is, like in Japan, you go there and the Buddhist priests have a sort of a stronghold because they cite scripture. When people die, it's a big deal. Of course, it's a big deal anyone when someone dies, but you know, every culture has its way of dealing with it. In Japan, you have to go through a special priest and go through a burial, and it's very expensive. And if you don't go through the priest, then they'll tell you that basically, you know, your relatives are going to hell and such. But it's the system has become corrupted over time, and there's a profit motive involved. It's not pure anymore. And this happens often all over the world. We can see in the history of Christianity, many of these things have happened. And therefore, it's important to understand, if you're going to take the spiritual life, what the highest standard and quality of it is. Just like if you're going to buy a diamond, you better know what a good diamond is before you go shopping. Otherwise, it's really easy to get a fake or just a substandard diamond. Because there's a lot of things to consider when you buy a diamond. There's the clarity of the diamond. There's a scale you can look at from yellow all the way up to perfectly clear. There's also what the cut is, who cut the diamond. Also, are there any natural flaws in it? And those are a little hard to see. You have to look carefully. Sometimes you have to look through a loop and look in the diamond. And the weight of it, etc. These all things add up to say what is the value of the diamond. But if you just walk out without any education and try to buy a diamond, and you'll be most likely, well, depends where you shop, but you could be cheated. So it's important to understand what the purpose of the Varnashram is, what the purpose of spiritual practice is altogether very clearly. And that way we can take to it and not in a way that we don't become cheated. Prabhuji. Here it comes.
You mentioned that first we have to save ourselves and then we'll try to save people who are in our vicinity. So how do we know whether I have really advanced to a certain level that I should then go ahead and help others?
Well, how do you know you've advanced in spiritual life? The Bhagavatam gives one test. It's sort of a self-test. Bhakti parishanu bhavu viraktir anyata traisha trika eka kala prapadyamanasya yatasnatas tushti pushti shudapayonugasam. And it says that you can test yourself to see how you're becoming advanced in bhakti. The same way you can test yourself when you're hungry and you eat food. And when you eat food and you're hungry, according to this verse, you get three things: nourishment, satisfaction, and eradication of hunger. And you don't need anybody else to tell you that you're getting full. You know for yourself, right? And you can feel that you're becoming nourished also, because if you're shaky and weak because of your hunger, you know, you start to feel fortified again, right? Maybe not after the first bite, maybe not after the first even, you know, 10 bites, but after a while, you know, it starts getting in your bloodstream and, you know, sometimes if I don't eat for a long time, I start getting cranky. And, you know, people around me say, I think you need to eat something. And I eat, my outlook on life changes. Okay. I'm okay again. And so you can tell for yourself in spiritual life, when you're hearing and chanting properly and you're properly aligned in spiritual life, then you'll feel, as Bhagavatam, bhakti parishanu bhavu viraktir anyatar traishitrika ekakala. It says, just as you get nourishment, eradication of hunger, and satisfaction when you eat food, similarly, when you properly take the spiritual life and you're surrendering in that process, then you get bhakti. Bhakti is something that's naturally there within your heart, and it starts to manifest, become uncovered, like cheto darpana marjanam, the process of hearing and chanting in the association of devotees. It cleanses the heart, and the heart begins to shine. Anubhava means that for yourself, you begin to perceive Krishna. Maybe, ultimately, it's not that you're going to see the form of Shamasundara everywhere immediately, but you begin to see Krishna's hand in everything. And you can understand, like, as it's said in the Bhagavatam, when something bad happens to a devotee, he thinks, oh, that was because of my past sinful activities. And when something good happens, and he thinks Krishna is very merciful, he reduced it. He's seeing Krishna even in bad things that happen to him. And when something good happens, he thinks, I didn't deserve that. Krishna's so kind. He gave me something. Whereas a materialistic person, he doesn't see God's hand in anything. And if something good happens, he thinks, I'm really smart. What do I need God for? And when something bad happens, he thinks, there must be no God, because I didn't deserve that. Why? How could bad things happen to such a good person? So a person advancing in spiritual life actually sees that Krishna's hand is in everything. Anubhava, he starts to relate actually directly how Krishna is in his life, is in his heart, and things are happening according to his direction. And very importantly, the third thing which happens when one's advancing in spiritual life, virakti, because that's the one you can't fake. I've seen people, I saw a guy who was ride his bike around Govardhan Hill every day, and he'd be just be bawling tears. I always looked, I couldn't tell if he was faking or not. But you can tell, someone can show symptoms of ecstasy or crying. They can learn how to fake that kind of thing. But virakti means detachment from the world. It happens naturally when one actually becomes full in spiritual life and actually feels satisfied. It's developing such an affinity for association with the devotees and for service and all these things, feels so full that all the other things in life just, they're unappealing. He would rather not be there in those kinds of association. He would rather not do things that distract him even for a second from spiritual life. He doesn't have a taste for them. This is real virakti because of the fullness of spiritual life. And you'll know that when you get that. Now, having said that, Shastra recommends, our books, these guidebooks are here to show us how to make advancement in spiritual life. Rupa Goswami tells us 6 things don't do and 6 things do. And if you follow those 6 things don't do and do the things you're supposed to do. And some of those things have to do with aligning yourself properly in spiritual life. There's a way in which, you can have guidance in spiritual life and take shelter of a devotee and the association of devotees in a proper way, as Krishna recommends in the Bhagavad Gita. Tadvidi pranipatena priprashnena sevaya uparakshantite jnanam jnaninas tadvadarshina. If you want to get knowledge and strength in spiritual life, find somebody that's going fast and, see if you can't catch what they call in racing, they call it drafting. When you're running a race, if you get right behind the other person, then it cuts out all the wind and also you get impetus. Sometimes at Govardhan, when we're going around Govardhan Hill, you could be really tired or something like that. And the way you go fast is, once you get out on the marg and you start walking, you see these sadhus that come around every day and they go really fast. So you just get behind one of them. That's what I do. And I'm tired and I'm thinking, and there's a sadhu, he's coming, and I just get right behind him and start following footstep for footstep. And then not only am I drafting, he's cutting out all the wind, but also, his the power of his movement and everything like that. I'm in step with him. Plus, I already know if it's dark at night and you're walking in bare feet, you don't know where you're stepping. Sometimes, you know, it hurts. You know, you're stepping on pebbles, and now these construction sometimes around Vrindavan and Govardhan, they just leave gravel around. And that doesn't feel good on your feet, really. But if you follow behind the sadhu, you step where he steps, you already know, you know. So this is mentioned by Rupa Goswami in his teachings about following in the footsteps of previous acharyas, taking shelter of all these things can help. You can have many gurus, shiksha gurus, who can help you in your practice. This is true in any sphere of life in which you want to make advancement. You take shelter of a superior authority and get advice. Say, how am I doing? You know, you check in. Say, you know, what do you think? And they can say, you know, a little bit to the left, a little more to the right, you know. And you'll get, that's the fast track. So all these things are there in the Shastra, given to us by the sages who are going fast around already. And they've left behind them this boat of transcendental knowledge. In fact, it's mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam that the sadhus, they actually themselves devise a means so they can easily go back to Godhead themselves. And then they mercifully leave that behind for everybody else. And therefore, the ocean of material life, which is very difficult to cross over, impossible to cross over by oneself, when one approaches it through the mercy of these other great souls, these Mahatmas, then the ocean shrinks up to the size of the water contained within the hoofprint of a calf. Yes, Rakshit Prabhu.
This was just a comment I wanted to make earlier when we were having this extensive discussion about the point that in just one stroke, by offering devotional service, one surpasses all other rituals. And what came to mind was, and I was looking for the verse but couldn't find it, whether it would be aptly relevant to what has been said in the Shastra, that the analogy is that it is Krishna from whom everything is emanating, the cosmic manifestation as well as the living entities, everyone. And that what all that one needs to do then is just water the root of the tree. And in doing so, in one stroke, by watering the root of the tree, all the other parts of that tree are automatically nourished, that one doesn't need to separately then take care of them.
Very nice point. And Kishore will give us the verse to back it up. Yata toro armula nashi. Can you give him the mic? Blast it out there for us.
Yata toro armula nisechanena trupyanti tatskanda bhujopashakaha pranopahara cha yadhendriyanam tadaiva sarvarhanam achyutejya.
Bravo. Very nice. And that means what Rakshit Prabhu just said. This is a verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Yata toro means just like a tree. If you water the root of the tree, then automatically all the branches become satisfied. So still back to this concept, one fell swoop, one thing. Water the root means if we boil it all down in this day and age, Harinama, Harinama, Harinama eva kevalam, kalauna steva, nasteva, nasteva, gatiranyata. There's no other way, there's no other way, there's no other way except by chanting the holy names of the Lord, chanting the holy names of the Lord, chanting the holy names of the Lord. And if you chant Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Then you're directly in touch with Krishna. You're watering the root of the tree, and everything good will come from that. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just recommended that everyone should chant Hare Krishna. That's the process. Without stoppage. And also don't make offenses. Srinivas Prabhu. Bali, Pru. Bali. Can you see who's doing? Check and see. He's there. Okay, that's right. Yes?
Yeah, since it's a Bhagavad Gita class, so I thought the reference for that is because we're talking in terms of education also for kids. So in terms of like Mahatma Gandhi, and when we take, he got his inspiration And it seems that he got his Bhagavad Gita book when he was in England, so he never got a chance to read when he was in India. So it's a great thing to have kids learn it so early.
Okay, I missed your point.
No, I was saying like he didn't get a chance to look at Bhagavad Gita until he was in England. So he was like, he passed his entire life or most of his precious life without even getting a chance to read.
Oh, so your point was about the school and educating kids from the very beginning.
Yeah.
To give a chance and opportunity for spiritual knowledge.
Because yeah. That's a book which fired up his imagination, I believe.
Nice. Thank you very much for that. Anything else? Last opportunity for complaints? Okay, so then yes, Vipul. Saved by the Bell.
I have a question. In the 8th chapter, there's this 19th shloka. Where it is said that again and again when Brahma's days arrive, all living entities come into being, and with the arrival of Brahma's night, they are helplessly annihilated. Now, why this word annihilated is used? Because living entities never get annihilated.
That's right. But they get wound back up again. When the material nature gets annihilated, the living entities go into a state of dreamless sleep called susupti. So there are different stages of consciousness for the jiva, and one of them is susupti, and in that dreamless state, they enter back into the body of Mahavishnu. Yasyaika nishvasita kala matavalam yajivanti loma vilaja jagananata Vishnur mahansa iha yasya kala vishesho govindamari purusham tamaham bhajami. When Vishnu breathes out, then the material nature becomes manifest. Of course, there's a whole process to it, which is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam, how it gets recreated, sub-creation and then the full creation. But the living entities are wound up in that. And in the Brahma Samhita, of course, you know very well that when Brahma is manifest from the lotus that comes from the navel of Mahavishnu, the living entities are all compact there. They're coming back out of the body of Mahavishnu after being in a practically unmanifest state for many, many millions of years in the body of Mahavishnu. Then they come out through that lotus stem, they get redistributed throughout the material creation, and they take up exactly where they left off again. How? Sarvasya chaham riti sannivishto matak smitya gyanam apodham cha. The Ishvara, Krishna, within the heart reminds them of their previous desires, and they take up where they left off in the last life. And this goes on over and over and over again since the time immemorial, anadi karma, until one comes in contact with a devotee of the Lord. And then one takes to devotional service. Yas twindra gopa matavendra mahoka sukarma bandhan rupa palabhajana matunoti karmani nirdahati kintu cha bhakti bhajam govindamari purusham tamaham bhajami. Then by association with devotees, taking up bhajana kriya, the practice of devotional service, that karma can be eradicated, and one becomes reinstated in one's eternal position as a servitor of the Lord. That's actual liberation. So, yeah, the soul's never annihilated at any time. He's a eternal, fragmental part of Krishna. Mamayavamsho jivaloke jivabhuta sanatana. He's a sanatana, eternal part. But he can get in a unmanifest state so that he's unconscious. Therefore, every time Mahavishnu breathes out, it's actually out of mercy. He's giving another opportunity for the soul to be reawakened. Because what does he do during the creation? He sends the 5,000, how many is it? Manus in every day of Brahma, 5,004 manus are manifest in every day of Brahma. So many incarnations of the Lord manifest at every day of Brahma. And their main purpose is to come and disseminate the knowledge of the Veda, so that every living entity can be reawakened by that and then come to their senses, come back to Godhead. Tamasi ma jyotirgamai. This is the clarion call of the Vedas, which is come out of the darkness into the light. You know, don't stay in this sleeping condition. Wake up, jiv jago, jiv jago. So it's deep sleep, and it's compared to death. Even in the Sri Shapanishada Surya Nama Te Loka Andhena Tamasavrita Tamste Pritya Bigat Shanti Yeke Chatma Hanojana. It's called Atmaha, or the killing of the self. If one doesn't take to Krishna consciousness when one has the opportunity, he's called the killer of his own soul. And so it means that you have such a great opportunity, great advantage, and then if you don't take it, it's like you committed suicide. But you never die. And there's always a chant, especially while the Harinam Sankirtan is going on, because, you know, souls everywhere, whatever condition of life they are, can be reawakened by hearing Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Gopremanande.